about God. And he's asked as an introduction that we read from the letter to the Romans, chapter 1, and verses 18 to 25. Romans chapter 1, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds, and four-footed animals, and creeping things. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So now we'll invite Stephen Ford to speak to us on the subject, Straight Talk About God.
Good evening, everyone. So, our topic this evening is going to center on a discussion really about these seven verses that you've just read, or we've read together. You've had read to you. I sat while you listened. And I'm going to be, just as Peter said, off balance to some degree, because I'm going to need to talk to you because there's more of you here than there is there, and I really don't want anybody over there to think that I'm ignoring you. But if I don't look at you very much during the evening, I don't want you to be slighted. So if you really would be slighted, just please move over this side. Sometimes I think that maybe the room is tilting this way, but it's fine. It isn't, because I've got something good to hang on to here if I feel that way. So one of the things I always learned when I was working in a classroom was that if people didn't sit in the front, then what you had to do is go to them. So that really got them quite annoyed, because I would gradually say, I really don't care where you sit, but wherever you are, I will be. So they gradually learned that if they sat in enough different places, they could really have a fun game, because I'd run around the room. And that did happen on the odd occasion. I promise not to do too much about that this evening, though. What I want us to think about, though, is it's safe to say that in the world today, there's a lot of confusion about God. I make that statement not because there is an overwhelming public commentary about who or what God is. In fact, one might reflect on the fact that there is actually very little, if any, public commentary on this issue at all. You may read some things about it, but there's almost an unwritten exception that, or unwritten acceptance of the fact that everybody sort of understands what God is. You only need to consider the current attempt in the province of Quebec to create what is known as a secular society, one that clearly separates church and state and makes public life one with no visible sign of any religious affiliation. So, and you can kind of follow that through, and there's certain elements of society there that would support that idea, and there's certain elements of society that would think that that's not really a very good idea at all. Now, Quebec is not on its own in this endeavor, because the nation of France is working through this process. And I'm not just picking on the Francophonie at this point in time, although it would seem that way, because there are many nations in the world that are attempting to create a secular society so that there would be no evidence of any religious belief in the public realm that you would see in that country or in that province. Now, regardless of the attempts by various nations to make public life less encumbered by religious affiliation, the fact remains that there are many different religions and many different gods. Often when you engage people in a discussion about God, they either are quite knowledgeable about their God, or they are ambivalent about any God, or they're openly disinterested in the discussion. Now, there's a broad spectrum that stretches from passionate engagement to passionate disinterest about God. And clearly, anyone could rightfully ask the question, which God is it that we're actually speaking about? And I remember once, when I was much, much younger, on a door-to-door campaign knocking, we were actually delivering pamphlets in Nanaimo. And it struck me very, very strongly that I had a conversation with a gentleman at a front door, and he actually asked me this very question. Well, what God is it that we're actually talking about? And we had a really interesting conversation. Clearly, people, though, ask that question. Which God is it that we're talking about? They would be justified in asking the question because of the number, great number of religions and the many different gods. And you could be just talking about just about any one of them. Now, more to the point, within what we would loosely refer to Christianity, there are many different ways of defining God within that religion. It seems reasonable to understand why confusion might set in as a person tries to make sense of all this, especially someone that is looking for some answers about God. What should they or could they think about God? In fact, they might ask the question, is there a God or gods at all? They might think, why even worry about this because it's all so confusing? They might be led to the conclusion that obviously all this talk about God must all be quite fictitious because everybody seems to have a different story. I'm quite convinced that there's no need for confusion. What I want to consider with you this evening is how we go about making the choice of which God to follow. Because it could be the God of the Bible. Is it Buddha? Is it Allah? Is it Vishnu? Who are we speaking about? Now, we know that there are a great number of gods. We know that there are a great number of religions. How is a person able to choose or know for certain which one to choose? How is a person able to know which one is right? Now, some of us, if not all of us here, have made the choice of which God to follow. We've chosen to follow the God of the Bible. We're committed in our choice, but it never hurts to reconsider and reconfirm our commitment and to revisit the reasons why we believe. Some may still be working through the process of that choice. Some of us will know others, friends and acquaintances, that are struggling with this choice. And what I want to do with you this evening is to explore what we know to be true about the God that we worship. I want us to explore and consider what the Bible tells us about why we can accept without reservation that God exists and why he is, without question, the only God. First, then, I want to consider something that faces all of us: making choices. Now, first of all, we all need to deal with the element of choice. And it hits you before you roll out of bed in the morning. Do I hit the snooze button? Or do I put my feet over the side of the bed and get out of bed and get my day started? And then if it's like me, do I make the coffee? And then it's, how many scoops did I put in there? It's only 6. I have a boring life. Right? It's what color are my socks? Anyway, choice is a part of our lives, right? Yeah, they're right. Okay, that's good. So, we all have it. We all use it. We all like it. And you have choice, yes? And the reason I know that you all like it is as soon as I take it away from you, you will tell me how much you're annoyed by me. Right? We're all annoyed at some level when we don't have it. The condition is always with us because we have within us the ability to consider a variety of options, weigh them carefully, and proceed with a course of action that we are convince ourselves is the most logical. Right? Good, thank you very much. Somebody agrees with me. I know that all the rest of you must because you didn't say yes or no. You just looked at me like, oh, dear. I'm wondering how many of you are actually happy with this definition of choice. How many times do any one of us actually make choices entirely based on logic? How many of us actually know what logic is? How logical can you and I actually be? I know I'm quite logical, but I know that some of you are terribly illogical. I think we are all, we like to think, that we're all very logical. But our decision-making processes are naturally impacted by a large number of factors that limit our ability to see the biggest picture that we might be able to see, or we should be able to see. Let me illustrate the point. This is a white screen. That's not the illustration. Just consider the possibility that you are going to purchase a new smartphone as opposed to a new dumb phone. All right. So a new smartphone. There was no market value for dumb phones. You're going to buy it. I know that there are a number of you that might likely say that there is not a chance that you would consider buying any of them at all. You'll have to bear with me for a few moments. So the question is, how many of you would pick this one? Don't recognize it. It's the new iPhone 5C. Slightly less capable than this one, which is the new iPhone 5S. Or how many of you would pick one of those, which is the Samsung Galaxy? Slightly nicer colors, but similar colors, yes? How many of you would choose this one, which is the HTC Windows phone, or a Windows phone of some variety? Or how many of you would choose this one, the BlackBerry Z10? All right, so I can understand why you might not choose this one. Not many people did, or will, for that matter. Not that it won't do what others do. It just doesn't have the cool factor. And the company is about to go bankrupt or be bought completely, and they've actually taken it off the market now. So you're going to make a choice. And the colors are nice. The screens are cool. What is interesting is that they all actually pretty much do the same thing. You can use them for a phone. And now that's a complete surprise, I know. You can also use them to text. You can use them to tweet. You can use them to send email and message each other. You can conduct your business. You can surf the net. You can listen to music. You can watch whatever you want to. You can play games. You can read books. You can check the stock market, find a restaurant, pay your bills, buy things, type a letter, take a picture. Find your friends, which is fun, if they really are your friends. Get a map and find directions. Ask it questions, and it'll talk back to you. And the list just goes on. Every one of them needs to be plugged in at the end of the day to charge, although that could change. Every one of them costs money. Every one of them is available in a variety of colors, except maybe the BlackBerry, because black and white is not officially a color. Which one will you buy? And why do you make the choice? Now, each one of you would have a different reason. Each one of you would make a choice based on a number of things. Probably two factors at least two factors that'll come in, and they're not just simple. They're combined with a bunch of things. It's like one of the factors is which one you like the most. What you like is driven by a complex set of emotions that manifest themselves in what color you like, what features you like, how it feels in your hand, what it looks like, who else has one, who else doesn't have one, how easy you feel it is to use, and how you think it makes you look. And you might have not bought a BlackBerry because you might have thought it made you look like an idiot. My preferences are showing here, but those are the kinds of things that make you make your choices. The second factor might be whether you can afford it or not. But I guarantee if you want it badly enough, you would give up certain other things in order to get it. So, what we do know is that both you and I like to have choice. Choice makes us happy. I'm being facetious at that point. Is there just one color and one? If there were just one color and one style, we would be less satisfied because there would be no choice in the process. Then someone could make a lot of money by making different colored sleeves to put them in so that they would be different colors and you could be different. You and I would not have the opportunity to be different, though. It would just be a smartphone, most likely black, and everyone would have the same model. Most of us at this point are muttering, boring, under our breath. So, I'd like to consider one more example of this. This man, Malcolm Gladwell, who if you really are very fascinated and interested, could go to one of the TED Talks and listen to him on this exact topic, choice, happiness, and spaghetti sauce. So, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this man. He's written a number of books in the past 5 years. And all of them are interesting in their thinking. But it is with regard to the title that I want us to focus on this one. Choice, Happiness, and Spaghetti Sauce. Mr. Gladwell was hired by this company. And I'm sure you probably recognize this as Prego Spaghetti Sauce. I could ask how many have ever eaten Prego spaghetti sauce, but you don't have to tell me because that would be unfair. How many of you don't know whether you've ever eaten Prego spaghetti sauce? That would be equally unfair. Okay, right? How many of you just make your own spaghetti? Never mind. All right, so their sales were flagging, their profits were down, and their business was looking grim. What was the problem? After much research and focus groups with people about what they wanted, it became clear that they didn't want spaghetti sauce. They wanted a choice about what kind of spaghetti sauce they would buy. They wanted different textures. They wanted flavors. They wanted different spices. They wanted meat. They wanted cheese. They wanted chunky. They didn't want to have the same old spaghetti sauce all the time. What Mr. Gladwell found out was that people were happy when they had choice about what type of spaghetti sauce they had. So if you extrapolate from that finding, and I will admit I've oversimplified it a bit, giving people choice makes them happy, or at least they think they're happy, and when they are happy, they will buy your product. Just remember, though, when it's all said and done, it's just spaghetti sauce. So, as a result, this is what we now have available to choose from. And as you can see, a huge amount of variety, different kinds of spaghetti sauce. You get the choice about what that's about. So let's just step back from spaghetti sauce and smartphones for a minute and look at this from a larger view. Just because you and I make a choice based on what we want and like doesn't make us right or wrong in exercising that choice. It's not a question of right or wrong. It's not a question of better or worse. There is just choice. What you believe about your choice is only your opinion. It's not necessarily the opinion that others share. You are not right or wrong in making that choice, and what you have chosen is not necessarily better than the choice that someone else has made. After all, this is just spaghetti sauce. Apparently, having a choice makes us happy, and at least it matters in the matters of food and smartphones. This is an enticing argument, Because when it's extrapolated beyond smartphones and spaghetti sauce, it gets very interesting. Consider all the areas that we can make choices, and the sky's the limit within most of our Western societies. Laws frequently expand and change in their scope to accommodate our desire for choice. We do not often hear the terms right and wrong, but we often hear the term alternate. Absolute values are really considered to be quite passé at this point in history. Right and wrong is situational, or reflective rather, or relative rather than applied evenly over all circumstance. And God is being relegated to this way of thinking. God is seen as a relativistic concept that's controlled by circumstance and situation, and is no longer the arbiter of absolute right and wrong. Because in Western society, it really isn't absolute right and wrong. God is no longer greater. He is placed in a container and controlled. Here's where the straight talk about God needs to come to play. So, what's really, really important for us to understand and come to grips with in our society is that God does not equal spaghetti sauce and smartphones. He is not the same. He is incredibly different. And we can't reduce him to that. And that's the point that we face in dealing with what and which God we should have, which God we should follow, and why. And that reason is terribly important. As ludicrous as this might sound, this is not far from how the choice to accept that a person might make to follow a God. It's entirely possible to use the same logic that we use to select a smartphone or spaghetti sauce when we consider what God we might choose to follow. Ultimately, this is really a bad idea, because using this type of logic would lead us entirely in the wrong direction, especially about God. Although some might like to think it to be so, God is not a made-to-order commodity that we design ourselves based on what we think he should be or what we would like him to be. We don't design him. He is. And we either accept that or we reject it. There is no halfway. There is not another way. This is a matter where there is an absolute. Now, just to stop for a few minutes, it's very easy in our society to pull attributes of a variety of different religions and gods together and say that's what you believe. We have a lovely word for it in the English language. We call it spiritualism. You're a spiritual person, but you're not really religious, because you can be wherever you are and you can collect all these attributes and you can use the one that really works for you at the moment. But there is an absolute. There is a right and a wrong choice. It isn't about what you or I like or want God to be. It's about what God is. It isn't neutral. You can't just reserve your decision. You can't sit on the fence. In this case, you are either right or you are wrong. Choosing not to commit is a choice not to decide, and a choice not to decide is a choice in the negative. Choosing to decide other than what is right has eternal consequences. We can make the worst choice of our lives and be wrong and dead. Or dead wrong, however you want to put that, but it actually works both ways. Because you and I, human beings, don't like absolutes, especially when they're applied to us. Especially when they're applied to us. We don't like to lose control. Some of us like to have more of that than others. But we don't like to be out of control. Nobody would like you... Well, no one would like me to say there's only one kind of smartphone you can buy and it's black. You can have any kind you want, but this is the kind that you can get. And it's black. And this is what it is. And it isn't anymore. And it can't be anything else. Yeah, but I don't want that one. I don't care. This is the one you can have. We don't like that. We don't like that about many things that face us. Men and women never have enjoyed this or liked it, because if we don't have choice and control over those choices, we're apparently less happy. Remember spaghetti sauce and smartphones. If you don't get the one you want, you don't get the one you like, if you can't design it by yourself, you're not happy. I'm not sure that I really am happy with the word happy. I think I'm more that you wouldn't be satisfied. So, in a reading that we had this evening, from Romans chapter 1 and verse 18 through 25, I want to go through these just a little bit. But as you see, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth." This is a stinging indictment, especially for those that would fall into the category of suppressing the truth through their unrighteousness. Men and women, either by their willing ignorance or intent, have through the ages chosen to suppress the truth about God through their unwillingness to accept his existence and to acknowledge his existence. And they have no excuse. They have chosen to do other things because that is what they wanted to do. They continue to do this. The question is why? Why would someone do this? Why would anyone choose a God other than the God of the Bible? I'm convinced the answer is because they can, and it is all about their perceived happiness. It's about what they think is better or what they like better, and not about what is the right thing. This is harsh. It's harsh sounding in one sense. After all, to say it immediately indicates that you don't respect their opinions and that you are very clear that they have made a very wrong and lamentable decision. The fact is, however, that they are wrong, because the God of the Bible exists, and they're rejecting him. Let's just push this a little bit further. If you were in a grocery store, there's a lot of choice, it doesn't mean that you'll get the best result when you make your choice. You just choose based on what you like or what you're used to. There's no verifiable standard that says that one product is the best of all the choices and that the rest are inferior to that product. God is not a product that we choose because we happen to like what he has to offer. With God, there is a verifiable standard, and God sets it. He is clear about his supremacy and that there is no other God other than him. And we can go to chapter and verse over and over and over again through the law, Deuteronomy, specifically, that says there is one God. And he spoke that over and over and over again to his children, to Israel. And he speaks it to us. There is one God, and that he is the one, and there was no other beside him. With God, we either choose to accept the truth, and the truth is that he exists and that he is the only living God. Or we choose to ignore that fact and believe a lie, that there is a choice regarding which one we should follow. We need to do our homework, not be blinded by those who would suppress the truth about him, because the truth is suppressed and will continue to be suppressed about him. So, Romans, the next verse, chapter 1 and verse 19. "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them." The indictment continues. He says, what can be known is plain. It's plain because he, God, has shown it to them, and by inference, if they could or should have seen it, then there's no doubt that we can do the same. So here's the question that will always plague us when we talk to people about him. Well, so how is it plain? How is it that we can say categorically without doubt that there is a God, and that we know without a shadow of doubt that he is the only choice and that there is no other? How is it that you and I can say with the utmost conviction that this God is the only choice? How is it that we can say, you and I, that this is just not our choice because we like it and it just happens to fit our choosing like anybody else? What right do we have to say that we are right and limit everyone else's right from choosing what they like? We can start right here with this verse, because it is plain. What can be known about God is plain to them. So, the question is, how is it plain? For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that that have been made, so they are without excuse. That's why it's plain. Things that have been made. Evidence in that. Let me just listen to the words of this psalm. Psalm 19, verses 1 to 6. You can turn it up if you've got it, but listen to the words. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. God made those. They declare his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. You cannot look up into the sky, day or night, and not know that he said he created it, and look in wonder and in awe of the fact that it exists and that he did. Their voices come throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom leaving its chamber, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Very picturesque language to say that it comes up in the east every morning, and it sinks in the west every night, and it does that with incredible, overwhelming regularity every day, 365 days of the year, and it doesn't stop. And in that we can see that what he made is evidence of his existence. Jeremiah chapter 5, verses 21 and 22, another set of verses that just once again underscore this. Hear this, O foolish and senseless people, who have eyes but do not, but see not, who have ears but hear not. Do you not fear me, declares the Lord? Do you not tremble before me? I place the sand as the boundary for the sea, a perpetual barrier that it cannot pass. Even though the waves toss, they cannot prevail. Even though they roar, they cannot pass over it. And you only have to look at the sea to realize the great plan and design which was there, that he made, that he said he did. His invisible qualities, his divine nature, and his eternal power, these are evident that they created, that he created, and they are clearly perceived. And the last sentence of this verse, incredibly powerful. So they are without excuse. You can't look at that and not know. You have to choose to see something different. God did not keep any of this secret and unknowable. And it was open from the beginning. Genesis 1 and 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He told his people, Israel, in Deuteronomy 5, verse 7 and 8, you have no other gods, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is on the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. He is the only God. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, animals, and creeping things. Claiming to be wise, they became fools. And lovely from Psalm 14 and verse 1, and we'll look at that in a few minutes, but the fool says in his heart, there is no God. In the past, people have chosen their own gods and fashioned them in the form of men and birds and animals. And you know what? This made them fools. That's not polite language. You don't go around calling people fools. But this made them fools. Because God says they became fools. They were foolish. This made them fools because in doing so, they chose to ignore that God existed and claimed that what they created was their God. Because in the short haul, they had choice and it made them happy. But they were dead wrong. They ascribed all the attributes of the real God to the one thing that they had made. It was what they chose, it was what they wanted, it met their needs, but it suppressed the truth, and it was wrong because it was a lie. They became fools because they claimed to be wise. Psalm 14:1 and verses 1 through 4, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They do abominable deeds. There is none who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all turned aside. Together they have become corrupt. There is none who does good, not even one. Have they no knowledge? All the evildoers who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon the Lord. Back to Psalm 10 and verse 4. In the pride of his face, the wicked does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. They became fools because they said in their hearts and with their lips that there was no God. They insisted that because they believed that there was no God, that they needed to create their own. It is no different today. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie. They rejected God and chose one of their own design. And in doing so, they took the truth and they said, I don't want that. And they exchanged it for a lie. It was wrong, dead wrong. There is no other God. There is no way around this. There is only one God, and we can know everything about him that we need to know and that has been known from the beginning of the world. It is in his word, and he reveals himself to us through it. It has not changed. God is the same today as he was yesterday and as he will be in the future. Just because someone might choose not to accept him doesn't mean that he doesn't exist or can't exist. God is not a figment of our imagination. He is real. He exists, and we cannot play fast and loose with that reality and expect that there is no consequences or are no consequences for thinking and behaving that way. We did not create him. He created us. Our friends and acquaintances may suggest that we are quaintly egocentric by not being able to see their view on the nature or existence of a God. They may accuse us of being intolerant of others' beliefs about how the world came to be and their view of God. On the contrary, It is not egocentric to reject an assertion that is patently false and misleading. It is, however, not politically correct and considered quite unenlightened in our day and age. I suppose we will have to put up with that, because it is the truth. The truth has been exchanged for a lie, and there is no choice but to speak out against it. There is no choice but to speak out against it, because we have a world around us that encroaches upon us, that is living to die. Living to die. Because they want to exercise that choice. Now, yes, we need to choose to follow God. And we need to choose because we know what he tells us in his word is the truth. Moses told the children of Israel, choose life. Joshua, when he led them into the land, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Choose you this day whom you will serve, he said. Choose. There are consequences for ignoring God. They did not see fit to acknowledge him. And God gave them up to what he says is a debased mind, because they were filled with unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, and malice. And watch how this develops, because he says they're filled. And because they were filled, they were full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and maliciousness. Filled with unrighteousness. That unrighteousness led to envy, murder, strife, deceit, and maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, and ruthless. That's what they are. If you choose not, you do not choose God, then this is what's left. And they deserve to die. That's, once again, really unpopular language. And we don't want it to apply to us, because we know that God exists. We know that what he says is true. And we know, without a shadow of doubt, that he is there and he has a plan and purpose with this earth. And we know, as the Apostle Paul told us in Galatians, that but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. Those that don't, as Paul says, deserve to die. But those that do believe in him and put their trust in him will receive the adoption of sons. He says to Timothy, for there is one God. I mean, he repeats this. There is one God, and he's not making this up. We know that this comes from the Old Testament, from the law. And there is one mediator between God and men, the man Jesus Christ. And we know this verse off by heart because we learn it as a Sunday school verse. And you could probably quote it to me. For as many of you as are baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ. And if you are Christ's, then you are Abraham's offspring and heirs according to the promise. The promises that God made. It's totally illogical to think that you're going to get those promises if you don't believe he exists. Absolutely and totally, 100% completely illogical. It's fascinating to have that discussion with people when they believe that they don't know what they believe, but they certainly believe that they're going to have part of this promise. For a final thought, This is simple, but it's elegant. And it's difficult to do because we need faith. We need faith, and without faith, it's impossible to please Him. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him. It is plain for us to see what God has done, and it is in His creation. There are those that would suppress that truth. There were those that would then choose other things to draw them away, to cover up what's there. But it's plain for them to see, and it's plain for us to see. And this makes us truly the happiest people that could be. Because there is intense certainty about the future. Absolute and intense certainty. Because God will send His Son to this earth, and He will establish His kingdom. And in the end, God will be all in all. And we know that's the case because we have truth, we have the faith that that is what He has said He would do, and that He is the only God, and that the time that He has appointed, He will establish His kingdom. And we have that to look forward to. We need to talk in a very straightforward fashion to our friends, to our acquaintances, and to one another about the certainty of what we believe and about the fact that we have a true and living God and that we can look forward to His kingdom, which will be established upon this earth sooner than later. Thank you.